This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, leave a passive-aggressive note on language's wonkily parked car. Coming up in today's show, generational labels. Who defined them, and how do they define you? Let's warm up with a little word history. Here's the etymology of chaos. Shout out to my fellow Brits. In the beginning, chaos was a yawn. In its root Proto-Indo-European form, grr. It's very hard to know how Proto-Indo-European was pronounced, it being the ancestor of languages from Punjabi to Portuguese. So from that ancient yawn, or gape, it evolved into the ancient Greek chaos, an abyss or chasm, which also comes from the same root. That sense of vast gaping emptiness is what the word still meant when it landed in English around the end of the 14th century. Then in the Vulgate Bible version of the Book of Genesis, chaos described the void before creation. And it's from there that around 1600 the word seems to have assumed the additional sense of absolute turmoil. The chaos before God stepped in and spent 7 days fixing it up. On with the show.
I do believe generally that we're all unique, but we're not that special. And
that's Miranda Sawyer. She is quite special.
You are not that special. You are part of a generation. And that affects your taste and it affects how you approach things.
So there's a certain amount of identity forged by the time in which you are.
Absolutely. Right. And it's to do with television shows, it's to do with fashion, it's to do with what happened to you as a teenager, it's to do with the general atmosphere that's all around you. You know, when you see programmes about the history of punk, they always tell you about 3 day week and, you know, rubbish in the streets. But it was quite awful. And punk reflects that. You can't help those things shaping you. They just do.
So if, say, you were born between about 1925 and 1942, you'd be part of the silent generation, as the McCarthy era taught you to lie low. Landed on this earth between 1843 and 1859, progressive generation. Growing up during the American Civil War, you'd react against that when you came of age and prioritise progress and reform over the pursuit of power. According to the circumstances surrounding them, generations have been profiled all the way back to 1433, the Arthurian generation. Much of the identification of the generational cycles has been spearheaded over the past 3 decades by Neil Howe and his late collaborator William Strauss. They even have their names on a theory, Strauss-Howe generational theory, but generational theory itself goes back further. Thomas Jefferson effectively espoused it in a letter to James Madison in 1789, contemplating how the United States could reboot its constitution every 19 years to allow for the changing requirements of each new generation. And then in the 19th century, generational theory really took off amongst philosophers and sociologists. Here's Neil Howe.
People began to think of history as directional. And society is really changing socially, economically, politically over time. That history really had was moving from and to somewhere. At the same time that happened, people became very aware of generational breakpoints and where they were, you know, on that acceleration, right? So did you come of age before the French Revolution? You know, were you a child of Napoleon? Were you a child of the new democratic assemblies? I mean, where were you when the railroads and the Industrial Revolution took off? Are you comfortable with the new middle class?
You know, I can remember Thatcherism, and people who are a few years younger than me can't remember Thatcherism, and it actually does colour your approach to life.
Whereas if you grew up outside of Britain, your approach would be coloured by something other than Thatcherism. The generations are not universal, geographically or socially.
Break points are not necessarily the same across societies. And in fact, the whole, if you take a look at very different societies, you may have a whole different kind of generational dynamic going on. And then there's the awareness, the collective consciousness, which gets into the whole naming, because of course, as soon as you're aware of it, you're tempted to name it. So
the idea of the generations solidifies when they have labels, but those labels are an odd collection. There's no aesthetic or thematic connection between, say, silent generation, baby boomer, Generation X and millennials, and the attempt to follow Generation X with Generation Y didn't really take off. Instead, millennial was the name that stuck, coined by Neil Howe.
The actual names that we have and that have become popular, that have become kind of the currency, they're very accidental. The origins of them are very peculiar. It's kind of like shooting a bullet into a cave and just having it ricochet around. I mean, there seems to be no rhyme or reason
The generations were named in piecemeal fashion. For instance, journalist Tom Brokaw came up with the Greatest Generation, while the Lost Generation was coined by Gertrude Stein and popularised by Ernest Hemingway. Generation X had a circuitous path to being applied to people born from the early 1960s to early 1980s. The term had been around as a label for disaffected youth since a magazine photo spread in 1952. It was a punk band fronted by Billy Idol in the late 1970s, named after an early 1960s book he'd seen on his mother's bookshelf, and then it became the name of Douglas Copeland's 1991 novel, the aimless characters of which came to epitomise the generation coming of age at the same time. But Generation X wasn't the label Neil Howe and William Strauss would have opted for.
We actually use the word 13th generation. We called them 13ers in generation, in that they literally the 13th generation in a row since the first U.S. generation of Sam Adams and Benjamin Franklin. So, and also conjuring up some of the bad luck and ill timing of their life cycle.
You were just born at a bad time, Generation X, so your name could have been a lot more negative.
The words often used at that time were often baby bust generation, because they were obviously product of a lower fertility rate.
Nice for that to be your identifying characteristic. And for your whole generation to be nothing more than a riff on the previous one, in this case, the baby boomers.
The new lost generation, a number of things like that. There was a general tens of kind of a lot of negative and despairing words about these kids, how badly they were going to do economically, how poorly they'd been educated, and so on.
But, unusually, the latest ascendant generation was labelled before its people even came of age and showed themselves, millennials.
So explain to Grandma here, what is a millennial?
So a millennial is somebody who's born between the 1980s and 2000s, and they're coming of age during this period of time, during the 2000s. They're becoming an adult. People who are 18 to 32 is the range.
That's Megan Tan, host of the podcast Millennial, about coming of age in your 20s.
The name millennial was pretty obvious. We figured their first birth year would be around 1982. They would be the first high school students of 2000. We figured there'd be a lot of ABC and NBC news specials about, you know, the high school class of 2000, right? Sort of their initial coming of age year, right? And so we said, well, you know, it's the new millennium. Let's call them millennials.
Do you self-identify as one, or do you just feel like technically you are born in that bracket?
Oh, I'm definitely a millennial.
How does it feel?
It feels good. I mean, I feel like when you claim it, you're just like, yeah, I'm a millennial. Like, it's pretty funny.
Why is it pretty funny?
Because, so if we're just talking about the word millennial, it's like everybody has these funny connotations with it. And I think when you are a millennial, it's almost like you're in a zoo and like people, like you don't know you're in a zoo and people are like watching you and you're like, why are you watching us? And then you realize you're in a zoo. You know what I mean? Like that's how it feels. You forget that you're in a zoo.
So you came of age peak Generation X, really.
Yeah.
If you're in it, are you actually aware that you're in it at the time?
You're aware of something, I think, and what you're aware of, and this does affect you when you're older, is you think that you're winning. And suddenly the culture that you thought was just you and your mates bubbling around the edges moves into the mainstream and becomes the mainstream culture. You're like, oh my God, we're right. All the stuff that we thought that was really brilliant, turns out we were right. And that's an incredibly heady feeling. It's not like you think you'll storm the barricades, but you kind of feel like you know, all that time that you spent, which I think is very common to everybody, where you feel like your nose is pressed up against the window and like, how would you ever get in? And suddenly people just go, oh, no, it's fine, just come in. And you're like, really? Okay, that sounds quite fun. And then, of course, what you understand is that by letting you in, the mainstream always gobbles up the alternative and then offers a kind of weird version of it. And, of course, when everything becomes mainstream, it isn't what you thought it was. It becomes just like a cartoon and not all the bits that you liked. All the corners get knocked off. And it becomes completely neutralised. But that's what the mainstream does. It's just at the time you didn't realise it.
Something for millennials to look forward to in 20 to 30 years' time.
The hardest thing for a generation that felt like they had changed something, and I imagine this is the same for baby boomers or for punks or anyone like that, is that after a while you are not changing anything. You know, why would you? You know, you're the establishment, so get used to it.
Almost like the generational labels themselves. entry into pop culture turned them from sociological terms into marketing tools and media buzzwords.
It's really because the name has been, it's just been used so often in headlines. Like, it's become this buzzword that people, where the trigger is for people to roll their eyes.
The term millennial conjures a number of stereotypes. Millennials are entitled. Millennials are selfie-taking narcissists. Millennials live with their parents and never grow up.
Like, we knew about the negative connotations, but we didn't know how impactful they would be. You're in it, so you don't really understand what everybody's issue is with the word. And you are the word. Like, so you're like, why does everybody have an issue with people like me? But I think just sticking it to the man and being like, yeah, this is me. Like, I am a millennial, and like, what I'm going through is very millennial.
But once the description and the label have been decided, how much does it matter what the people are actually like? And how much will their characteristics be edited and distorted to fit a pre-existing narrative?
I'm a massive believer in confirmation bias, because everybody says, oh, this is really terrible. You only see what you only see. And I understand that. But that doesn't make it any less genuine. Those emotions that surround an era, you know, sometimes a story is made out of an era, and I think that, yeah, it tends to be a white boy story, for instance. So the story that we hear from music, pop music, really, you know, begins with the Beatles and the Stones, and then we go through and it's just white boys. And so that confirmation bias I'm very aware of and conscious of. But generally, I think confirmation bias is kind of fine, because it shows you that lots of people felt the same way. Confirmation bias is just as true as anything else.
There is a reality to social generations that transcends, you know, what we bother to call them. It's sort of like, even if you didn't have a word for gravity, right, there would be gravity.
Bit different, because gravity is a force to which objects are subject indiscriminately, whereas the generational labels ought to be subject to the individuals to whom they are applied, but may be misrepresenting.
The problem with labels is they put everything in aspect, don't they? It's like they've got the butterfly and they've just pinned it. There you go. Labelled.
I was born in 1980, too early to be a millennial, too young really to catch the Generation X wave, so I've missed out on a generational label. I guess I'm lucky not to be pinned or covered in aspic. On the other hand, it means I can't attribute my behaviour to anything but my own terribleness.
I wonder what the next label will be, because millennials, it's sort of finished now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's still like the 18-year-olds are coming up. And like the 16-year-olds, I guess, will be a part of a new generation. And that generation, I mean, everybody's going to pick on the younger generation. Like, can you imagine being 13 and growing up with Twitter? Like, that is...
Oh, God.
Yeah, like that. But that is, like, what's happening. People are teenagers and they already understand that they are creating a brand for themselves personally. We can't, I think, look at them and shake our finger.
There are already some labels on the table for the post-millennial generation of people born after 2005. Homeland Generation, Generation Z, iGeneration, Neo-Digital Natives... Or maybe the term is yet to be invented that will be annoying you in New York Times think pieces 20 years hence. In today's episode, you heard, firstly, from Miranda Sawyer. Her new book is called Out of Time. It's about midlife crises, and you can read more of her writing at theguardian.com. Neil Howe has written a lot of books about generational theory, including Generations, The Fourth Turning, and Millennials Rising. Find out more about his work at his website, lifecourse.com. And Megan Tan's podcast Millennial is the newest member of Radiotopia from PRX. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is... galactagogue. Noun. Medicine. A food or drug that promotes the flow of a mother's milk. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by Devon Taylor, Chica Ayres, and me, Helen Zaltzman, with music by Martin Austwick. I'm taking the rest of July off. The show will be back on the 5th of August. In the meantime, stay in touch. I'm Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter, and you can find all the episodes at theallusionist.org.